Mac, before we start, I believe we're just teetering on the edge here. Tell me more.
So the TED Talk I did last year, which was published in November.
And it's a bit of a humdinger.
Thank you, John. We're a couple of hundred downloads off a million.
That's impressive, Mac.
So listeners out there, if you want to push this thing up to a million, go on, make my day. Have a look at it in TED. It's called The Power of Unconventional Thinking, and we'll get this over a million downloads. So it's TED.com/talks/David McWilliams. But the title is The Power of Unconventional Thinking, and that'll be a hoot. Imagine we could do that this week.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It is podcast time, but it's podcast time with a difference because, John, I am standing on Galata Bridge between Galata and the old city in Istanbul. And this week we're going to do a podcast from Turkey. And the reason Turkey is crucially important now is that Turkey is the most critical country in this region. You've got Iran on one side, you've got Israel on the other, lobbing rockets at each other, and in the middle stands this country of 90 million people, between East and West, between Christian and Muslim, between Soviet Russia, which they used to be the enemy of and now are close to, and the United States. Turkey, the biggest non-American country in NATO, a critical player, and yet often overlooked. So we're going to do economics, politics, sociology, demography, and geopolitics, all from this extraordinary place, Istanbul.
Istanbul, na Constantinople, Istanbul, na Constantinople.
Your musical references are no bounds, John. No bounds. And it's interesting you talked about Istanbul, not Constantinople, because we're going to talk about both cities in this podcast, right?
Yes, indeed.
So I was...
By the way, he's sitting there with a fez on his head.
Tommy Cooper fez on my head.
Just like that.
Exactly. No, but I just say, you know, you've been to Istanbul. It's an amazing place.
I went there a few years ago and I fell in love with the place. Yeah. I thought it is one of my favorite cities because it has everything, old and new. And like, it's the real crossroads. I know we're going to talk about this.
No, it has.
It's a real crossroads. It's the cliche, you know, between Europe and Asia, but it's the crossroads of the world.
It's the crossroads of the world. And you do get that sense when you're sitting there, particularly now when you have Israel, Gaza, Iran, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the whole world is being sucked into the vortex of the Middle East again. And you have the sense in the recent history of the Ottoman Empire, the end of the Ottoman Empire, we'll talk about this a wee bit, of all those mistakes, all those imperialist mistakes made by the Brits and the French when they were carving up the post-Ottoman world. And the fact that all these countries are just kind of creations. I'll give you a bizarre statistic, John.
Yeah.
50 countries, right, that are today in the present United Nations, 50 countries were once part of the Ottoman Empire.
Wow.
So isn't
really?
That amazing? So
that
50
is a good
new
one.
Countries
yeah, that's good.
That have been constituted in the last 100 years were once
not only occupied, but ruled by the Ottoman Empire. So I was here for a couple of days, had to do a gig, which was, that had to do. It was wonderful, right?
You were forced to do it.
I was forced to do it. I was forced onto the plane, right? And I went to a place called Prince's Island, John, right, which is an island off the coast of Istanbul where Trotsky was holed up for a couple of years. And the fascinating thing about that is I was walking around the cemeteries because, you know, this is the sort of bizarre thing I do. Yeah. And all the cemeteries are Greek. So again, it's the echoes of the people who were there, the Greeks, the Jews, the Armenians, the whole thing.
But actually, there's the, apparently the Celts come from there.
Well, we all come from Anatolia. All Europeans, that's true.
Yeah.
Go on, tell us the story.
But the Galats, I mean, you were on Galata Bridge.
Yes.
And there was the people called the Galats who set up a state in the middle of Anatolia, where Ankara is now.
Yeah, right in the center, yeah.
And they were salt merchants, but they crossed the Bosphorus and into Thrace, into Greece. And on up, and they became Gauls and Celts. So they are...
So we are from central Anatolia.
Absolutely.
Well, it's amazing because most Europeans are obviously from central Anatolia. And if you look at the DNA of central Anatolia, it is the most diverse DNA still to this day because of all the thousands of years of migration of people. We're going to go from Noah's Ark to Kamel Ataturk.
She's got the Bible out.
I'm telling you, the Genesis, but not just Genesis. Yeah. No, Noah's Ark is in Genesis. It's also in the Epic of Gilgamesh, the great book of the Sumerians. It's also in the Quran. So you just think about what was this idea? Why do all cultures have this notion of the Great Flood? And could it have possibly been that the Great Flood happened and was viewed by people, hunter-gatherers, and they passed those stories down over hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years, just sitting around the fire, having a chat, looking at the stars,
right? He sounded like Giorgio from Ancient Aliens now.
What? I haven't seen Ancient Aliens.
Oh,
it's good.
Man, what have you missed?
Really? We're going to be talking Taylor Swift and Ancient Aliens and Gilgamesh and Noah's Ark and the economy of modern Turkey all in one go. But it's fascinating you talk about the Celts because it's interesting when you look at Turkish people, right? They're so different. There's Turks with red hair, with blonde hair, blue eyes with green eyes, very, very dark. I mean, they're an incredible mix. And you can just see, like, when you're out there, I was at a park, maddest thing, right?
Go on.
Before we start, right?
Yeah, go on.
2 nights ago, I'm at a party, right? I get invited to this party. Friends of mine said, you have to come to this party, right? Very upscale thing.
Right.
So I'm sitting on this big balcony, looking out over the Bosphorus, and all the ships are going up and down, and it's extraordinary. It's
nice.
This huge trade. Remember we talked about the choke points in world trade? This is one of them, right? Incredibly important. And somebody is playing at the party. There's a private gig at the party, and I think it's a Sophie Ellis-Bextor cover band.
Right.
But it's not. It's her. So she is singing, right? And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And I've only had 2 or 3 wines at this stage, right? So basically, it's about 8:30 at night.
Yeah.
Sun has just gone down. The last call to prayer is in one ear. Sophie Ellis-Bextor is in the other ear. So you have basically Murder on the Dance Floor here. Yeah. And the last and final prayer. And they're all fighting for my audio affections. And I just thought, this is so
brilliant.
Typical. You've got the old culture, Islam, ancient call to prayer. And then you have Sophie Ellis-Bextor doing a Murder on the Dance Floor.
Talk about a senses overload there.
It was completely senses overload. So that was my Thursday night, John. That was my Thursday night in. But now what I want to do is I want to put it all into a framework, right? Which is the world is going to be sucked back into, as I said, the vortex of the Middle East yet again. And of course, the key country in that is Turkey, because Turkey is in NATO.
Yeah.
But Erdogan has made Turkey very, very friendly with the people who hate NATO, most the Russians. Turkey is in the West, kind of, but it's also in the East. Turkey is Islamic, but it's also secular. Turkey is a burgeoning country. There's 90 million people in Turkey, of which 13 million are immigrants from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, from Syria, all over the place. So in a way, when you talk to Turks, they're dealing with the very, very same issues that we're dealing with. But geographically, it has always been this extraordinary place. And geographically, the interesting thing is geography counts.
Yeah.
And history counts. And economics and geography are so bound up together that I think it's crucial we'll do a week of Turkey, John.
Well, absolutely. But let me ask you this, just a couple of questions to start, because Turkey is a fascinating place. It's a little confusing as well, because on one hand, the Russian question, for instance, Erdogan had a bit of a row with Putin a little while ago, and they shot down jets in Syria. Now you're saying they're kind of best of friends again.
No, no. What I'm saying is that Turkey is going to and has been playing everybody off each other.
Right.
That's the key.
Yeah.
And that's why Turkey's so important. So they're not really... So, for example, this weekend, the leader of Hamas, the actual leader of Hamas,
right,
is in Istanbul, or is in Ankara, talking to Erdogan. He's right. come from Qatar. So again, any peace in Gaza is going to be brokered, not by Qatar, not by America, not by Israel, but by Turkey.
But this wouldn't be the first time either that they've brokered peace in the Middle East.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Because they played a big role in the Lebanon, didn't they?
Syria, Lebanon. I mean, the interesting thing about the Turks is they've always been slightly removed because they're not Arabic. They're not Persian, they're Turks, right? And they're the very old tribe who've been knocking around for a long, long time.
Yeah, but the other question as well is that, you know, they've always had ambitions to join the EU and they haven't been allowed. What's their position on that now?
They haven't been allowed. Countries like France are very against the Turks. So in the 1970s and the 1980s, the movement of Turkey towards the EU was regarded as almost an article of faith in Istanbul, that this is the way they were going to go. And that is the direct genetic link to Ataturk. So Ataturk comes in. We'll talk about Ataturk, I think, in the next podcast, right? Because he's a fascinating person. But Ataturk comes in 1923, 1924. So the Turkish Republic that we know now is 100 years old last year into this year. And that was very much part of the secular promise to Turkey that they would join the EU at some stage. But of course, France in particular, and latterly Germany, decided that there was basically too many Muslims. I mean, they've thrown up all sorts of smoke and mirrors and screens and things, but effectively it was, can the European Union accept in a country of 85 million, which would be 85 million Muslims in the European Union, which when you scratch the surface is a Christian gang. It's a Christian, you know, Europeans won't tell you that, but it is. It's a Christian club. And of course, the French, like Giscard d'Estaing, and then of course the French right wing or centre right, were very much, no, this ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's very Christian of us, though, is it?
Not very Christian of us. Yeah.
Okay, tell us about Turkey as an economy, because it is, as you're saying, a hugely influential and powerful political force and military force in NATO and stuff. But like economically, because I know there has been inflation, but can you actually call it, is it hyperinflation at this stage?
Well, inflation is running about 70% per year. So that's pretty much hyperinflation, right? They've also had a massive policy shift in the last 12 months. But I'll tell you, one of the hardest things to buy in an airport now is a postcard. Right.
Okay.
I wanted to send a postcard to somebody, right? I decided to send a postcard home yesterday and I was in the airport. First of all, it's very hard to find a postcard.
Yeah.
Secondly, it's almost impossible to find a post office selling a stamp.
Yeah.
So I find the post office eventually in the airport and I go in and I had been tapping on my phone all the way up to this. But of course, the post office is back in the 19th century and you need cash.
That's the world over.
Right? You need the, exactly. So I gave him 10 euros for a stamp and I got back hundreds of lira in change for the 10 euros. And the reason is the following, is the lira, the Turkish currency, has been collapsing, right? So I'll just give you in the last couple of years, right? In September 2021, one US dollar was worth about 8 lira. Today, one US dollar is worth 34 lira.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
So that means if you're a Turk who is dependent on liras for your income and has no access to foreign exchange or the trading economy, you have seen your living standards collapse. And surprise, surprise, those people who used to be counted on by Erdogan to support him with that strange combination of nationalism and religion, they have now turned against him. So there is a real sense in Turkey right now that the experiment, which was a 20-year experiment of Erdogan Islamizing Turkey, which had been a secular state, and we'll talk about that in a second, is now has reached a peak. And what has destroyed him is not necessarily that people are not religious, or not necessarily that people have given the two fingers to Islam or anything. It's actually that the basic idea of the standard of living for the average person has fallen, because inflation obviously erodes consistently.
But what sparked inflation? What were the economic policies?
So this is the mad thing. Mm. So in most economics, there is a relationship between price and quantity,
yeah,
right? So if you increase the price, right, of something, you will eventually cause the quantity of that something to actually dissipate.
Yeah.
So if you increase the price of money, the rate of interest, right, eventually the economy will begin to slow down, right? And usually when you have high inflation, the response to high inflation is you increase interest rates to try and wring inflation out of the system.
Yeah.
Erdogan decided that the response to high inflation was lower interest rates. So he turned economics on his head, and he believed, right, in some kind of bizarre world, that the central bank of Turkey, right, he would actually fire all the central bankers, because he believed that the way in which you actually bring down inflation is you bring down interest rates. And that, of course, created complete havoc in the last while.
Who was advising them?
Well, this is the bizarre thing. So the way he thought the world was working, right, was that basically inflation was being maintained by high interest rates, because the high interest rates were being used by speculators to buy and sell currencies.
Okay, sure.
So he identified the high interest rates as the problem.
Yeah.
So he forced the central bank to reduce interest rates. But what happens if you reduce interest rates? What you are doing in effect is you're just printing money. And the Turks were printing money. Now, why were they printing money? And why would he like this?
Mm.
Is because the Turks had, over the last 20 years, certainly over the last 10 years, have seen a massive, massive increase in borrowing. Borrowing abroad, number one, but borrowing internally.
Okay.
And kind of power brokers from central Anatolia and from the heartland of Erdogan became, not unlike the Irish story of, for example, the Galway tent, right?
Yeah.
Same idea, developers and bankers lending money to construction. And then, of course, what you had was these massive existing debts of Erdogan's friends, the developers.
Yeah.
And how do you get rid of debts very, very quickly? What you do is you do a combination of, you reduce interest rates, which means the burden of the debt disappears, and you jack up inflation, which means today's cost of yesterday's debt falls.
Yes.
So he was trying to engineer, although he talks about this great Islamic thing, he was trying to engineer debt forgiveness for his friends to keep the party going. But the problem is, but the problem is, as you know, it is, if you decide to side with debtors, what you do is you freak out creditors, i.e. people with money. And what those people do, even, you don't have to be rich to do this, is they say, well, hold on a second, if the central bank is reducing interest rates, but I know inflation is rising, that means I've got to get the hell out of the currency as quick as I can. So Turks across all parts of society sold their lira for dollars, or for euros, or for gold, or for anything at all, any real asset. So what you've seen is that property prices continue to rise dramatically in Turkey, because people want to get their paper money into real hard assets.
Mm.
But all the while, the entire game in Turkey is an extraordinary, and it must be very anxiety-inducing, game of earning money, getting rid of it, earning money, getting rid of it. And where you see, as I've always said, the exchange rate is like a lie detector for the economy. If the economy is bullshitting you, you'll see it in the exchange rate. And what you see is the exchange rate collapsing as Turks realize.
Yeah.
But interestingly, up until the last few months, Erdogan was still popular because he had this big dose of culture.
Yeah.
And now you see he's lost in the last provincial elections. He's lost even areas that are really Islamic and really fundamentalist and really what we would call old-fashioned are voting against him. And they're voting left,
but they were,
which is fascinating.
But they were the guys who also were protecting him from, because there was the attempted coup a few years ago,
Coup, the Gulenist coup a few years ago. And the Gulenists are like, if you can imagine...
Gulenists?
Yes, they were called... Gulen was a guy who lives in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
And if the best way, I think, for Irish people to understand it, or Western Europeans to understand it, is that if you look back at history, there was always this parallel... Do you remember the Freemasons?
Yes.
Right? So the Freemasons were a parallel power base in the 18th and 19th century. Very, very important. Not so much here, but very important in Britain and in France and all these sort of places. In Germany, particularly, and very, very important in America.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a sort of a secret brotherhood that was a parallel influence in a society. And that's what the Gulenists were. So they were in universities, they were in the judiciary.
Did they have funny handshakes as well?
I bet that they had very funny handshakes.
And aprons,
exactly. And little set squares. Yeah. Actually, at the Dorky Book Festival, we used the Masonic
Hall. I know, it's a fascinating place.
It is a fascinating place. But to come back to Turkey, so what you have, it's very, very clear to me, is that Erdogan's idea has peaked. And you now have a vacuum. Who is going to come after him?
Yeah.
And what is Turkey going to look like? And this is why it's so fascinating, because as the power vacuum in Turkey widens, Turkey is also, coincidentally, the key player in what looks like a massive, massive Middle East struggle for power. And the Turks have always been slightly, slightly distant because they're not Arabs. So they're Muslim, but not Arabs.
Yeah.
Everything about Turkey feels very, very different from the Arabic world. They have been implacable enemies of the Persians for thousands of years. I mean, that's an old enmity. So they're not about to get into bed with Iran anytime soon, right? They have their army in Syria. They dislike intensely Assad in Syria. That has been a serious, serious bone of contention. And of course, they dislike Israel. But they also prop up Egypt. So they're playing all these various different games. And at the center, you have the key factor, which is Turkey is still a secular state.
Actually, by the way, what's Turkey's main industries? What's their main exports?
Everything. They are a massive manufacturing power. Massive.
I know they have Beko.
They're massive engineering.
And everybody has a Beko fridge.
In fact, on the way home, on the flight, I talked to a fellow from Kingspan. Just fellow sitting beside me, you know, that big, big Irish company. And they've got factories everywhere. People don't realize Kingspan's an enormous company, factories everywhere, right? And he was down visiting a factory in Turkey. He was saying that the Turks commercially, they are so brilliant. They are traders. So it's the interesting thing, you see that economy I described of the chaos and the currency and movement, right? What that is manna from heaven for trading commercial people.
Yeah.
And because of their geography, and because of their history, they have always been trading between the East and the West. And they've always been kind of engineering their way around and negotiating with the Russians on the one hand, and then with the, for example, Europeans on the other. Take, for example, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes.
1961 was solved by Turkey, not by America.
Not by Russia,
not by Fidel Castro. So basically what happened was the Americans had to do a trade with the Russians. So the Americans had to say, okay, Russia, you cannot put missiles within 100 yards or 100 miles of Florida. And the Russians said, but you have your missiles right beside us in Turkey.
Yeah.
So the Americans called up the Turks and said, here's the deal. You stand down our missiles, which are pointing at Russia, from what would be the north of Turkey, the south of the Black Sea.
Yeah.
And then we will do a deal. So it wasn't just a great standoff. Everyone talks about the great Kennedy standoff and he actually stood up to Khrushchev. No.
Yeah.
A deal was done. And who brokered it? The Turks.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
You know, so the World War III that was about to happen in the early 60s was actually brokered by and dissipated by and defused by Turkey.
Well, let me ask you this then, bringing it right up to now and looking into the future. Like, if this power vacuum is increasing within Turkey, and they play such an enormous and crucial role in the Middle East as that kind of crossroads.
Yeah.
What is going to happen in the Middle East? How are they going to deploy their power and all the rest? And how is that going to affect the Middle East and indeed Europe into the future? But why don't we come back to that?
Grant.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment.
Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So Turkey at the moment is finishing or coming to the end of this 20-year experiment with Erdogan. And you're saying that it's causing this kind of void within Turkey.
Yeah.
But they play a crucial role within the Middle East, politically and militarily, being a member of NATO, etc., etc. So how is that going to affect the Middle East and indeed Europe into the future?
Right. Well, I mean, the first thing is the economy of Turkey is the Achilles heel of Erdogan.
Yeah.
And as I said, all this inflation that he has presided over to in effect bail out his heavily indebted mates has destroyed the social fabric and undermined this idea that we can have Islam and secularism working together.
Yeah.
So this is the void. So they need to fix the economy. And in order to fix the economy, they need to bring inflation down to some level that is manageable. Now, what the central bank has done is moved interest rates. Imagine this, John. Moved interest rates from 8% to 40%.
Wow.
So what they're trying to do is they're trying to suck up all the excess money in the system.
Should we move our savings over there?
But the problem is then, if the interest rate goes up, as long as the currency establishes. But right now, the currency is falling still quickly. Right. But there will come a moment, John.
Mm.
We'll take 500 quid, we put them into Turkish lira, and we'll absorb the hit. And then we just go on our holidays over there, right? But to stand back, Turkey is the 16th or 17th largest economy in the world.
Right.
So it's big, right? It's over $1 trillion as GDP. So it's a big economy. It makes huge amount of manufacturing, enormous amounts of textiles, enormous amounts of agriculture. And it is, in many cases, what would be regarded as a rapidly developing second-tier economy, which is gradually becoming a first-tier economy. The economy of Istanbul, on the other hand, is a city of 17 or 18 million people. They're not sure, right? But it's enormous.
Yeah,
yeah. It's incredibly wealthy. It is incredibly sophisticated in terms of its consumer economy. So you've got this consumer economy in Istanbul and a production economy outside. So it's huge capacity. Now you contrast this with any other state in the region. Take Syria. It's a failed state. It doesn't exist. Take Iraq, also a failed state. Take Iran. It's a state under massive sanction. So it can't really grow. Then you have the oil-rich oligarch states of the Gulf. Mm. What they are, in effect, are simply petrol states.
Yeah.
Without petrol, they're nothing. So Turkey is the diversified one. Turkey is the one that has the most capacity. Turkey is the one with the most educated women. Turkey is the one with the better education system, all that sort of stuff. So what you can see in Turkey is it has the capacity to be a massive player. The question then is, does it go secular in the secular way that it seems to be going now? And if so, is it the model for that part of the world that you can have Islam and you can be Muslim and you can be observant and you can also be part of the world? Now, of course, what Erdogan was doing, Erdogan was always orientating it slightly to the east, which was very, very distinct from what had gone before, which is the Kemalist view, right? Which we'll talk about in the next podcast, John. Now, for example, the Turks probably need to be slightly more friendly to America, if this is the way. Interesting, Erdogan said the Americans, after the Iranians lobbed those rockets at Israel before the Israelis had their counterstrike, Erdogan said, you cannot use our airspace. And you pointed out that the last time he said to a major power, you cannot use their airspace, the Russians ignored him and they shot down two Russian MiGs, right? So they're serious. Serious thing. But it would seem to me that Turkey will now lean more towards Europe again, as opposed to leaning towards the East, because where its real power is being the conduit between America and Europe, particularly America, and other Muslim countries like Egypt, like Iran, like Syria, like Iraq, all these places where the Turkish army, don't forget, the Turkish army is on the border of these places and it's big and it's significant. It's the biggest after the United States, it's the biggest army in NATO. So it's absolutely huge. And then, of course, you have the relationship with Russia, because the Russians and the Turks have always disliked each other historically. And you can argue that the Armenian genocide was a result of that enmity, right? But of course, they share the Black Sea together.
Yeah.
So they have a huge interest in what's going on in Ukraine, because the Turks would quite like the Ukrainians to be a buffer state against the Russians. And then, of course, there's another scrap going on, John, in Nagorno-Karabakh, right?
Explain that one.
Azerbaijan and Armenia.
Yes.
Where the Turks are supporting Azerbaijan, who are their Muslim brothers, and the Russians are supporting Armenia. So there's also a proxy war going on there as well. Now, the Armenians have lost that war in the last few weeks and months, but that doesn't mean that that tension is gone. So you've got all these various different players.
And the Kurds is the other one.
And the Kurds are the other ones. And the Kurds are the great downtrodden nation.
Yeah.
They are the nation who have never, ever had a homeland. They are the nation that have always been shafted. There's Kurds in Iran. There's Kurds in Iraq. And there are many, many millions of Kurds in Turkey. And the interesting thing about the Kurds bring the Iranians and the Turks together on the basis that my enemy's enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
And the Iranians don't want anything to do with Kurdish independence. And the Turks don't want anything to do with Kurdish independence. So they've a kind of a truce together between the Persians and the Turks, which is a scrap that goes back thousands of years.
So it actually serves a purpose. I was going to ask the question, why don't we create a Kurdish state like the Israeli state?
Well, because, and now think about it, then there's the last piece of the jigsaw on the Kurds, right? Which is Mosul in Iraq. So Iraqi oil is Kurdish in the main. So the last thing the Iraqis want to give up is their oil revenues. So they are implacably opposed also to a Kurdish state. So what you find is that Turkey has an interest in suppressing the Kurds. Iran has an interest in suppressing the Kurds. Iraq has an interest in suppressing the Kurds. And those three powers are sufficient to disembowel Kurdish aspirations for their state.
Yeah.
And the fascinating thing is the last time I was in Turkey, I again went to a dinner. And it was in somebody's house and it was really nice. And I was kind of invited along by my mates. And I kind of, you're kind of a curiosity because you're from Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
And the usual things you've red hair and they ask you about you too. That's it. That's the only thing they ask you about. It's really funny, right? You come in and you're from Ireland and it's not James Joyce or it's not this. It's you too, right? So, but interestingly, we were chatting and there was two distinct groups, but they were all chatting away in Turkish. But there was one group and they were all getting on really, really well. And they were Kurds and they were speaking Kurdish. And I asked my Turkish mates, who are their mates?
Yeah.
And they're all friends. Do you understand a word they're saying? They said, not a word. So fascinatingly, the Kurds, of course, speak Turkish.
Mm.
They live in the Turkish society, but they also speak Kurdish. But no Turks speak Kurdish, or very, very few.
Yeah.
And that's always the way with top dog races and underdog races. The underdog always speaks the language of the top dog. The top dog never speaks the language of the underdog. And that struck me as being really evident when I was sitting there talking to these Kurds.
Yeah.
They also gave me the most disgusting thing I've ever eaten. Sheep's bollocks. Brutal. In a stew.
I would say so.
Oh, man. Man. And of course, you're trying to be the nice guest. And you're just sitting there going, oh, delicious. Delicious. Delicious.
It's a bit chewy.
But to look forward, John, the relationship between Turkey and Europe is going to be a phenomenally interesting one.
Yeah.
And again, the reason it is because Turkey is the point at which, I told you there was 12 million immigrants in Turkey. They're from Afghanistan, they're from Pakistan, they're from Syria. Most of them will look to come or want to come to Europe. So Turkey is the front line for Europe in an immigration issue. And the Turks are obviously going to negotiate with the Europeans about how they deal with immigration. So if you think about globalization, globalization puts all these assumptions that we have about the world and sovereignty, throws them all up into the air. So here you have the Turks, a buffer against problems in the Middle East. But they themselves are the recipient of hundreds of thousands and millions of immigrants.
Mm.
A lot of those immigrants want to come north, okay, through Greece and all the way up, as we saw a couple of summers ago. They are also the buffer state against Putin's Russia, although Erdogan is kind of ambivalent about Russia. He's like, well, you know, Putin's not really my enemy, you know? Turkey will need to restructure all this debt. This goes back to the economics. They will need to restructure all this debt that's in the country. Because what Erdogan did was that he looked to the east, took loads and loads and loads of dollars in investment from the Qataris. All that money now has to be paid back. They don't have it, so they're not going to pay it back. So there's all these other leveraging things going on at the moment. So it's an absolutely fascinating place. And we're going to come back to the history of Turkey in the next episode, John. But I think we leave it here that what we have is a crucial, crucial crossroads in the world. And for the last 20 years, people have kind of forgotten about it. But I would say for the next 20 years, Turkey will be front and central, European, Asian, Middle Eastern and American geopolitics. So we're going into the Turkish era. Talk to you on Thursday.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.